Welcome back in. Hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Teresa Walker from the Associated Press will join us to begin the 9 o'clock hour. We'll get into the latest with the Tennessee Titans with her. Hal Gill drops by at 9:30. Prez Radio analyst looking ahead to tonight's game between the Predators and the Florida Panthers. And speaking of that game, make sure you're tuning in later this morning at 8:45, later this hour, for your chance to participate in Pred's Pick to Click and win a prize pack brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. We'll have that opportunity coming up for you here at 8:45. And Joe, right now, going to talk a little college hoops. It's March. The tournament is right around the corner, and some tournaments already underway. The OVC tournament has begun, and Belmont back in action last night, a 78-61 win over SIU, and Nick Mazinski back in there. Now, we were wondering what his health was going to look like. Obviously, I don't think he's fully healthy at this point. 18 minutes last night for Mazinski, 2 of 3 from the field, finishes with 5 points, but Belmont able to roll and kind of coast last night, 78-61. Good to see him back in there.
Yeah, I thought maybe they would try to just rest him till Friday because they do get an extra day now. They don't have to play until the semis Friday against either Murray State or Jacksonville State. And I know Murray State's not as good this year, but that's still Murray State. It's a rivalry. No, Elijah, you're shaking your head. You're not buying it?
They wouldn't scare me this year. I mean, of course, yeah, there's the rivalry aspect. And they matched up with them well the first time.
Throw out their records, Elijah.
And Moose's health here is the ultimate X factor, but I just haven't been that impressed. I don't even know if Murray State can get past Jacksonville State.
Well, they may not.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a real possibility that Jacksonville State beats them by 10 or so.
And they were led last night, by the way, by 19 points from Jacoby Wood, freshman. I haven't promoted an athletic
story. You did a great story on him the other day.
Thank you. So, yeah, if you want to read about Jacoby Wood, actually a really heartbreaking story that he's overcome, the death of his brother, it's on theathletic.com right now. And, talk about – I mean, this does not happen much. He sent me a text last night and thanking me for doing the story. Like, what a kid.
Wow.
It's like after he scores 19 in a tournament game and has the courtesy to do that.
That's very nice.
I mean, a freshman in college. What kind of an idiot I was as a freshman in college? It's amazing sometimes, some of these kids you run into. Which, by the way, another one, and I know we're going to talk about him. Like, if anybody didn't see John Fulkerson's presser or read it, man, it's been a tough year for him on the floor, but that guy's a gem.
Yeah, he is. He's awesome. And we'll get to more of that here in just a second. Some interesting stuff from the Vols yesterday. Like, Belmont, to me, if you can get Mazinski rested up here, I still feel pretty good about their chances to win the tournament here. But you brought this up the other day, and I guess I just didn't realize it until I started looking at it. Like, they could have the same team back next year and even better than they were this year.
No, it's
incredible. Pretty unbelievable.
They have no seniors of note. It's incredible to me, because I mean from day one with Grayson Murphy, I remember and it turned out to be Rick Bird's last team. We didn't know it was going to be his last team, but from the start, I'm like, oh, this guy's tough. This guy's a winner. And Mazinski, but that feels like 5-6 years
ago. I know,
and they're juniors. No, I mean because Jacoby Wood is special. Talking about the story in Jacoby Wood, as a player, I think he's going to be their next star point guard. Right now, he kind of plays more on the wing, but he's a point guard. And Luke Smith, everybody, they're coming back. I mean, they lose Adam Kunkel, and I was like, oh, that's not good. Oh, Ben Shepherd, by the way, could be an NBA player someday. I mean, honestly, he's 6'6". He's already an elite defender as his offense develops. They've got a lot going for him. And if Caleb Hollander plays like he did last night at the four, then I really like their chances to win this tournament and be noticed in the next one.
Ben Shepherd, Windler-esque. I mean, a very, very similar type deal there.
Right, D&3 guy, good size, athleticism,
One thing I noticed, too, and this is a stat I looked at yesterday, is that with Mazinski coming back, obviously making a huge deal, especially with their two-point shooting percentage. I mean, they're top three in the country in two-point shooting percentage. On the season, they made 60%. Of their two-point shots. When Mazinski was gone, they only made 44% of their two-point shots in those two losses to Morehead State and Eastern Kentucky. Defensively this year, they hold opponents to shooting 47.7% from two-point range. When Mazinski was out, teams were shooting 55% from two against them.
So it turns out he's pretty good.
That is a big difference. The defense changes completely if he is not there. Caleb Ollander, fantastic defender, and I thought filled in for him pretty nicely, defending the five some in what looked like some smaller lineups. But it helps when you have that extra, what, 4 or 5 inches, yep. I guess. That helps defensively.
Yeah, and then offensively, either scoring.
Exactly.
Or, you know, you get a double team and a layup out of it.
Right. Yeah. So,
quarterfinal of the A-Sun getting underway tonight. Lipscomb taking on Florida Gulf Coast. What kind of a threat is Lipscomb in this tournament?
I think they're a threat. I mean, you know, Liberty is sort of the class of the league again, but they beat them this year. Bellarmine, did I say it right? Bellarmine.
Yep. Don't sleep on Bellarmine.
I got a lot of texts when I called them Bellarmine or Bellarmine or whatever last time. But they're new and they're good. But, yeah, look, talk about a big guy who matters. Lipscomb has – I think Lipscomb and Belmont both have fives who – it's awfully good that they got them, you know, like the guys who, you know, power five level players to me. So, Hassan Asajila, really good player. Yeah, if they get good perimeter play, they got a chance here in Lenny Acuff's second year to make a run, and that would be Sunday is the final of that Sunday afternoon.
Joe, you mentioned John Fulkerson and the Vol. Some comments yesterday made by him. Talking about his struggles this year and trying to get back to the level that he was at last year, I thought really just some open and honest conversation from John Fulkerson. Did say if it's not the NBA next year, maybe he comes back to Tennessee. Says he doesn't want to play college basketball anywhere else other than Tennessee. Some really open and honest thoughts yesterday from John Fulkerson.
Yeah, he was great. And, like, even, like, you know, again, thanking media. You know, like, no one should be doing that. But, John, you're just that nice of a kid. Talking about being a kid growing up in Kingsport and rooting for the Vols and the whole recruiting process. And, you know, the struggles this year that have been hard to understand. I'd like to know from Tennessee fans, do you like the idea of John Fulkerson coming back next year?
Probably not if he's playing the way he's playing right now.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, look, they've got a – and part of this is on Rick Barnes, too, in recruiting. They've got to find a post presence. Like, that's got to be priority number one this offseason. I mean, you feel great about Kennedy Chandler coming in and the talent that you're still going to have here if you're Tennessee next year. You've got to find somebody to play in the post. I mean, whether that's Fulkerson – kind of regaining his form. Maybe he discovers something again here this week, and maybe he comes back next year. Or I think regardless, you've got to recruit better there because that has been, I think, an area of weakness so far for Rick Barnes at Tennessee, especially lately.
Yeah, like the international thing, and they've gone heavy there, can be beneficial. Pond's been a really good player, and Vescovi was a good pickup. Vescovi's a good player. Like Plavsic is an example of someone who had a lot of hype, and last year was like it was like the end of the world that they couldn't get the waiver for him. Then they did, and we're still waiting for him to do anything.
Yeah,
he's got the size.
The NCAA was doing them a favor, I guess, by not letting him play their part last year. He's really struggled. The hype comes from the height. He's a big man.
Yeah, and I mean, I've seen him shoot. Like he's got some skill. But, you know, look, it's hard to play in this sport, too, if you can't be effective at all as a defender in ball screens, and which is he right now, he can't. It's hard to be on the floor. That's why even Fulkerson, a lot of these late-game lineups, has been out and Pons has been at the five. So, but, yeah, I mean, they've got Anasicki coming back. They do have a forward coming. I mean, Corey Walker, but he's not a post, really. You know, he's a power forward. And they've got a forward coming in with Kennedy Chandler next year. But, look, maybe Fulkerson. I mean, you could have worse scenarios than Fulkerson coming back next year, even though he struggled lately. And maybe he will. Maybe this week will be good. I would expect a lot of emphasis Sunday on trying to get him the ball and kind of get him going.
And then some interesting comments by Rick Barnes yesterday on not being ranked anymore in the AP poll. It talked about, you know, the fact that he thinks about it now, they've been ranked all year, that they're not ranked, and it's a big story that shows you how far that the program has come, and then talked about how the goals are the same as everybody else and that there's no difference. But did admit, like, would love to be ranked at the end of the season here before the tournament starts. So Tennessee got a big one coming up against Florida. I mean, that's a team that really handled them the last time they played earlier this season. This is a chance for you've had some time now to kind of reset, maybe reset mentally as well. You need to come out and have a really good performance against Florida this weekend.
Yes. Now, Florida just lost a tough one to Mizzou,
yep.
Which actually, if Tennessee wins, now Tennessee can surpass Florida and can get the double bye and not have to play until Friday. So that's a big deal. I mean, you want if you want to make any kind of run in this tournament, and that's every team wants to try to, you know, do something that's memorable. Obviously, it's all about the NCAA tournament, but when's the last time the Vols won the SEC tournament? 77?
Yeah.
Is that right? 1977? So you're not – this team isn't winning four games in 4 days. So if they can win Sunday and get the double bye, maybe they can make a run here.
When we come back, we'll continue the discussion on college basketball. Obviously, it's March. Everyone loves the tournament. Everyone loves March Madness. What do you think about college basketball to begin the year? How much interest do you have? And how does college basketball going about making it more popular to begin the season rather than just at the end in the tournament? We'll discuss that coming up next. And remember, 102.5 The Game is kicking off every single weekend with free beer. And who doesn't love free beer? Make sure you're tuning in all day on Friday for your chance to win a $25 gift card from Bavarian Beer House located at Opry Mills Mall. We'll have that opportunity coming up for you tomorrow. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Right now discussing college basketball, taking your thoughts all show long at 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025 on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Joe, you and Elijah both, I am surrounded by two people that just love college basketball. From the opening tip of the season till the final buzzer of the tournament for March Madness, you're all about some college basketball. I enjoy basketball as well. I would not consider myself anywhere near the college basketball fan that you and Elijah are, but I enjoy watching some good level basketball. But I don't think there's any question. Most people, when March comes around and the tournament is here, they love participating in the brackets and pay very close attention to the tournament and love watching, as we discussed the other day, one of the best events that we have in the world of sports all year long in this country. Not so much in November and December and January. Why do you think that is? And if you're college basketball and you're trying to grow the game, how do you go about doing that in areas and in months other than March, your opinion?
Well, first of all, I think it's insane that people don't – I mean, I think college basketball has actually done a lot for that. On the early season stuff, the Champions Classic has been great. They've put together great – I mean – if you're a sports fan around Thanksgiving, obviously there's a lot of great football, of course, but it's incredible basketball in a normal year. All kinds of tournaments, great games. So I think they've done a good job of that. I mean, Belmont was going to be in the Orlando tournament, and it used to be the Old Spice tournament. I forget what it's called now. It might just be called
it's just the one that's played at Disney. It's the only one I know of now. That's the one that's played where the bubble in the NBA was. That's pretty much all it is.
Exactly. But so I mean, I think they've done a lot of event stuff that's smart. To me, the product is what you have to work on. To me, it's officiating is where I start. I can go on the soapbox again and again on officials that drive all over the country and work, you know, 7 games in 7 days, and how do you expect them to be competent? How do you expect the officiating to be good if you don't invest the money? And there's plenty of money to be found in more reasonable hours and just better pay. I mean, and more incentive to be good. Also, I like 6 fouls. I know that there's, you know, the NBA is 6 fouls. College has 8 fewer minutes. I like 6 fouls. I think too often we see top players and coaches and college coaches trust their players a lot less than NBA coaches, which I understand, right? But auto benching is a huge thing in college basketball. 2 fouls, auto bench, guy sits there for 15 minutes. There's one thing I would change. I mean, every time a guy flops does not have to be a charge call. And I swear, like, it's just, it's got to, that's got to be fixed. That's a little nitpicky thing. But even, like, freedom of movement, I think, was a good idea for Kyle. I'd be interested in your thoughts on this, Elijah. Like, freedom of movement has been a thing in the NBA. I think it's, in theory, a good idea for college basketball. But what we end up having a lot is we have free throw contests.
Right.
And we have, see, in the NBA, they really do let hand checks go. You know, and there's
pretty
still,
much, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, they don't, it's not just a complete whistle fest. To me, like, it is too often in college basketball. So, freedom of movement, great idea. But again, if people are getting into the bonus 5 minutes into a half, then we're just watching free throws.
That's an issue. That's a huge, huge issue. And a lot of that, I've always felt, is the rules are so vague. When you look at, like, the textbook definitions of what fouls are or flagrants are, they're so vague and leave so much room for interpretation that you're able to interpret almost anything as a foul. There's not a lot of, like, set, defined definitions to a lot of these plays, especially when it comes to flagrants. I mean, the guy got hit in the head. Well, he didn't get hit really hard, and you can tell it wasn't the intent of the player. But by the rule, I mean, there was contact made to the head and neck area. That's a flagrant one. And then you're putting that guy as a one-fifth extra out of the game, and then another team shooting more free throws. And it's, I think a lot of the problems with the foul situations, I agree. I mean, there is a huge free throw fest that goes on in a lot of these games, especially in the back end of the second half of some of these. It gets over-officiated to the point where it just slows the game down. It does kind of make the product a lot harder to watch. But I think a lot of that would be fixed just by getting overly specific with your definitions of what these fouls are, and then applying and having your refs be full-time, to where in the offseason, they're learning these hard definitions. Like, yes, you can tell by looking at the play in 15 seconds or less if it's a foul or if it's not. Instead of, we have a flagrant foul situation, we have to go stare at the monitor for 5 minutes. It slows everything down and makes it a lot harder. I don't mean to go full Jeff Van Gundy here and complain about video officials, because, I mean, that's a once every broadcast thing. It's a big gripe of mine. But, I mean, there is some merit to it, where a lot of that stems from not referee incompetence, but where they're given these very, very vague definitions of what these fouls are, and what should be a simple yes or no turns into Supreme Court-esque debates of interpretation of these rules when it's really not that necessary.
There's just so many delays, and that happens to the NBA too. I mean, look, the NBA product is just, it's going to be better, obviously. They're the best players in the world, and we're watching these incredible, I mean, some of these teams and players in 130 to 125 games. It's a great era to me for the NBA. And there's still too many 52-50 games in college, so some people...
That's the big turnoff for me.
Yeah.
Like, I just can't do it.
Right.
The 53-50 college basketball game has no appeal to me whatsoever.
It's interesting with college basketball, too, because it's like, tell me a sport that has more iconic coaches, for example. Both active and even, like, you know what I mean? I mean, I don't think that there... I honestly don't think there are more iconic, beloved coaches in any other sport more than college basketball has.
You're probably right.
And the passion in some places with some of these teams, I think it's the best fan environments for any sport. I mean, I'm lucky enough to have been spit on by the Cameron Crazies a couple times as they, like, seriously, like, could be arrested for how much they're rubbing on me as I'm on, like, press row.
Yeah.
But
borders assault.
Yeah, I mean, and Allen Fieldhouse in Kansas. I mean, these are like, there's no better sports environment than these places. I swear. And again, Memorial. I've only seen it a couple times, but like Vandy, Tennessee, a couple years ago when Vandy almost beat them, and they were great. I mean, find me a better sports environment. Find me any football game that has a better environment. You won't. And again, like Bridgestone when the Preds, amazing. There's a lot of great ones. But I put college basketball up there with anybody in that. But it's just the masses don't connect to it like I think they should. So making the product better is the only thing I can come up with, short of March. But again, I think that the early season stuff they've done to give us great matchups is one big step in the right direction. I just don't know how you avoid some of those ugly games. You right. have ugly mean, games in the NBA too, but
right, but ugly games in the NBA are like 97 to 80. Like we had one of those the other night watching the Heat play. Wasn't very good.
Oh, yeah, against yeah. yeah, scoring 80 points at home against one of the worst defenses in the NBA. Yeah.
Was not great.
But yeah, and then the thing is too, especially with the fouls, that was what causes a lot of these 50 or scores that are in the 50s because teams don't establish an offensive rhythm if there's a foul being called every other possession.
Right.
I mean, I think if you loosen that up and you're able to go a handful of possessions in a row, teams are able to find rhythms, especially teams with a lot of good 3-point shooters. 3-point shooters are creatures of habit and rhythm. And if they catch it in rhythm, they're able to get a good rhythm of the game and get a good feel for the game. Usually they're gonna shoot a whole lot better. Like in the NBA, there's a good pace in the NBA to where shooters have are able to run freely, and they have a lot more freedom of movement too, and they shoot a lot better. The shooting numbers in the NBA, obviously because they're better players too, but are better in the NBA. Offensive numbers are better in the NBA. The one thing I think that's the flip side of that coin is the lack of diversity in styles in the NBA. There's only 3 or 4, I guess, discernible styles between some of your best teams, whereas in college basketball right now, you could play a team like Virginia and your game plan is 1,000 times different than if you're playing Gonzaga or even Murray State that plays in transition the entire game.
I'm glad you brought up Virginia because a lot of respect for Tony Bennett and Dick Bennett, okay?
It's hard to watch.
But they are part of the problem. I mean, I'm sorry. John Glennon, I hope you're listening. Like, I understand you're trying to win. And if winning means that you slow the game down to a crawl and you play this pack line defense, and then look, I can't knock you for winning. But I go back to in 1 year, this is 99-2000, so this is Michigan State's national championship year. They played Wisconsin 4 times. Dick Bennett was the coach.
Yeah.
I wanted to spoon my eyeballs out. And they played again in the Final Four. Right. Anybody remembers the Final Four game? It was 19-17 at the half, Michigan State over Wisconsin. And I was like, I cannot believe that this is the Final Four. This is the largest stage, and we have to watch a fourth Wisconsin-Michigan State game. This is disgusting. So, like, there are styles that should – maybe they should just ban that. But you know what? 24-second clock. I think college basketball should do everything the NBA does.
Agreed.
Go 24.
Oh, another thing, too, at the end of games, or make it where timeouts, you can advance the ball. How many times in college basketball games does a team call a timeout down 2 seconds with – or, yeah, 2 seconds down, like, 2 or 3 points and have an inbound the ball underneath their own basket? It seems really small, but NBA games are changed late games because you're able to advance the ball after timeouts. Yeah. That's a huge thing that college basketball should absolutely adopt.
All right,
that makes Baylor West Virginia the other day, even though that was an absolute thriller, one of the best games of the year, that makes that more exciting down the stretch in those last two plays.
See, now I may have to disagree with you on this one.
Oh, I love it.
Because
why? Because Christian Laettner made a shot?
Well,
30 years ago?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, those plays are – I mean, what about Bryce Drew's play, for example, right? I mean, that was an incredible play, full court pass, then a pass back to him.
So we're talking about two plays.
Oh, there's more.
Okay.
I can give you the play from Baylor, West Virginia, where they tried to run the same thing, and the guy chucked it out of bounds.
Well, so sure. Yeah. No, I know. I kind of side with Mike DeCourcy. He wrote an impassioned – he had a bunch more examples, too, about how it shouldn't – totally mimic the NBA game, and these plays are some of the greatest plays in the history of the game. Why do you want to take that away? I kind of.
You're gonna have to give me more examples than two. All right, that's 30 years for me to agree with that statement. We'll talk about this on the other side of the break. Get your reaction as well. What can college basketball do to be more appealing in months other than March? Let us know on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Also have some Preds thoughts on the other side as well. We'll do that next. But right now, I got to tell you about my friends at FanDuel. And one of the things I love about betting on basketball is I'm always finding a new player prop or game prop that I like. And what's cool about FanDuel Sportsbook is you can combine these props with other bets from the same game to score an even bigger payout. And it's called the same game parlay bet that you can only find on FanDuel. You can combine the money line, the point spread, the player points, player assist, any way you want to take it, they've got options for you. And right now, new and existing users can get up to $25 in site credit back each day if your parlay falls one leg short with same game parlay insurance. You heard that right.
every single day. That's why I bet on FanDuel. It's so easy to use. They get your money safely in as little as 24 hours. So just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today to try a same-game parlay and use promo code ROB at sign-up. That promo code is ROB. You must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. Refund issued is non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 7 days. Max refund of $25. Terms apply. See sportsbook.fanduel.com for details. And for problem gambling support, call 1-800-889-9789. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We've got your opportunity for Preds Pick to Click, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, coming up in about 10 minutes. The Predators taking on the Florida Panthers tonight, so make sure that you keep that in mind. We'll have that opportunity coming up for you here shortly. But Joe, right now, talking about a little college basketball, what can it do to be more popular in months outside of March? Everybody feels great about the tournament. Everybody loves watching the NCAA tournament. How can they make the game more appealing in other parts of the year? Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ben texts in and says they need to make each game matter more earlier in the season. What do you think of that from Ben?
I'm trying to so is that to say play conference games earlier? Because that's actually been a change. I mean, these leagues have added conference games. The Big Ten plays 20. What is the SEC normally? Are they playing 18 in a normal year, right?
Yep.
I believe. So they've gone up in conference games, and they've, the Big Ten in particular, but others too, have kind of sprinkled in some mid-December stuff. Or is that to say play fewer
duds,
like guarantee games?
Yeah.
Is that, yeah. Look, fans say the same thing about college football too,
yeah,
right? Like, why are three or four of these games against totally inferior competition, you know? And then the coaches will tell you, because I don't want to get fired.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yes.
And we can't play a big game every week. People are going to get hurt, et cetera, et cetera. But listen, from the fan perspective, if I'm a fan, this is why pro sports is superior, because every game is a real game.
Yeah. Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Nate texts in, says the product is different this year with little to no fans, and I think that's what it's turned a lot of people off this year about college basketball.
Yeah, but this is not. But we're not talking about that. I mean, this is a real thing. I mean, I think college, by the numbers, college basketball, I think, has been declining. Now, look, I think you've seen declines in viewership across sports. I mean, it's football and it's everything else. But this has been a thing that, again, college basketball, you know, the NABC and people involved in college basketball have been grappling with for years. So I don't doubt that this year it is weird turning on like Cameron Indoor and seeing just plastic cutouts and being able to hear, you know, the bench yell every time someone makes a play and all that stuff. But this is a bigger problem than this year.
Well, part of this is where you live too. Like here, like if you're a Tennessee fan, yeah, you're excited about this basketball team, but football is always king here, and you had your coach getting fired. You had another coaching search underway. I mean, you're talking about mid-January where football news is still dominating. Like, Tennessee fans are going to pay more attention to that stuff than they are to college basketball, even if your team is really good, like Tennessee was early in the season. Like, that's just the fact, and that's part of being in the SEC too, other than Kentucky.
Well, I'll say this, though, about Tennessee fans. You know, when those Grant Williams teams even started to get good, and I'm thinking even like 15, 16 when he was a freshman, a couple times I went to Thompson Bowling and it was packed, and I was like,
sure,
man, 20K plus in here for a good team, but not in a, you know. And then obviously you get to Grant Williams' junior year, and that's a team that was great, and it was the environment was just amazing. You know, another thing with Tennessee fans is, you know, the women's basketball program has such a – I mean, I think of – obviously Tennessee football is the – if you had to pick one franchise, one program, team in this state's history, you start there, right? Going back to Robert Neal, I mean, all that stuff. But wouldn't you then go Lady Vols basketball second? I think easily.
Probably so.
And really, relative to its sport, it is the most dominant team in this state history by far.
Right.
So what was the interest level in that when Pat Summitt
It's pretty high.
Was in her prime, and yeah, pretty high.
It's another thing, too, of where you live, and that's even where you live in this state.
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up in Jamestown, Tennessee, small town, further east, a little closer to Knoxville. And I'm telling you, I watched more Lady Vols basketball games than I did the men's basketball team growing up.
I heard that from a lot of people.
They were definitely huge. Around that time, it was massive. And then, of course, there's a couple of high school teams in the area that are some of the winningest programs in the country, too. Like, girls basketball, just in that part of the state, is bigger than it is here. And then when the Lady Vols are at their peak, I mean, that was just as much a part of basketball season as the men's was. I mean, growing up, I used to fill out women's brackets, too. And I still do. Like, well, I know a lot of people there that still do. They keep up with it. I mean, my grandparents have not missed a Lady Vols basketball game in like 35 years. You know, they watch every game on TV that they can. They go to the games they can. So it's like, even over there, it's still relatively big. And a lot of it's just geography as well.
What frustrates me, speaking of geography, about basketball in this state is there are so many great programs, and I think they need to pool their resources. To the texter's point about games that matter, we need to have this thing. Whatever it is, whether it's a tournament or a showcase, we need to get Belmont and Tennessee and Middle and Memphis and, like, Lipscomb. Like, get everyone together and have something here in Nashville that would make it a big deal. I mean, I still hear about Belmont Lipscomb at Memorial in 1990. You know,
outside of that, like, there's no reason for Tennessee and Memphis to not play every year. No reason. Like,
absolutely.
They should play every year.
No, that's the most infuriating thing. And, like, with Rick Barnes, I understand Penny, you know, popped off after that game. I don't care. Give fans what they should get. Fans want to see it. And I've heard some Tennessee fans like, oh, forget you, Penny. Like, so you'd rather not watch a game that's between rivals that are heated? You'd rather
beat them, right?
Again, to the point of like, okay, so you'd rather watch Tennessee play, you know, whatever, in Coastal Carolina or whatever. I mean, no, don't you want a game that actually gets you excited?
The scheduling of that game, too, the last 2 years they played it, I've also thought was rather egregious. Like, they played it in December, and I get it. You don't want to throw a game like that in your conference schedule. But think about what some of the biggest Memphis-Tennessee games ever played were played, like, in February. Or played towards the end of the season when there is no football. There's no NFL to compete with. It's not Saturday at noon. I mean, the last Tennessee-Memphis game that was played, I would have watched, but I was graduating college. I mean, you're at the beginning of the day. You know, you're putting that game on, and you're just going to take eyeballs away from it. I mean, you're going to have to schedule it a little wiser to the point where that's the one thing that I really enjoyed about Calipari and Pearl coaching Tennessee and Memphis is they're showmen, and they're going to make sure that rivalry game had all the eyeballs in the world on it. And this is one thing that's kind of missing, I guess.
At least play it, though. Yeah,
at least play it. Yeah, exactly. If anything, play it. But
yeah, the one in 08 was, I mean, the whole country watched.
That was the
everyone watched
most memorable college basketball game I've ever watched.
I'm sure. I mean, the entire country is watching that game.
In the history of the state.
Yeah.
That probably was. And then you had the second most the week after. We got Andy Beaton.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Caleb texted in, I would enjoy a point-based system like the NHL. Some deserving teams could then possibly make the tournament. Maybe a point system for some overtime losses. What do you think of that?
Yeah, something
similar. 2 points for a win?
Let me introduce you to the net rankings, my friend, because that is the closest thing you will have. If you've ever visited Warren Nolan's website, warrennolan.com, the net nitty-gritty page, it basically has a point system similar to that, where they take into account quality of wins, quality of losses.
Margin.
And he breaks it all down for you. And that is something that the tournament committee does use. It's not maybe specific as the NHL's point system, but there is somewhat of a point system.
Yeah. There's a lot of, I mean, the whole tournament thing, which, again, it's fascinating, too. I mean, I think it makes it unique, the selection committee and the bubble teams. I mean, I love that, you know. I mean, it's a great conversation, kind of like college football. But college football has gotten stale to me because it's like, okay, Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State, and Oklahoma or LSU, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, but the college basketball, but, okay, we're not talking about March. March is good. March is fine.
Right.
It's a matter of making it better before that. It's not easy.
It is not easy. When we come back, we'll switch gears and get into the Nashville Predators, and it's time for Preds Pick to Click, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. Be the first caller at 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025.
for your opportunity to guess the goal score for the Predators in tonight's game against the Florida Panthers. If you win, you get a prize pack brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. We'll do that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And it is that time of the day. Time for Preds Pick to Click, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. The Nashville Predators taking on the Florida Panthers tonight, 7 o'clock puck drop, pregame at 6 o'clock here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And it's your opportunity to guess the goal scorer for tonight's game. See if I can get on the board. Robbie Stanley still 0-for on the season in Preds Pick to Click. The listeners have gotten 4 correct answers. Joe Rexrode at 4, Ryan Porth at 1. Elijah Campbell picking for Ryan Porth today as well. So we'll see how we do in today's competition. And with that in mind, let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in today's participant, which is Jack. Jack, thanks for calling in to Robbie and Rexrode. We appreciate it.
Hey, happy to be here.
So, Jack, the Predators taking on the Florida Panthers tonight. Who is your goal scorer for the Predators in this game against the Panthers?
Oh, I mean, I know this might be a cop-out answer, but that power play has been rocking. I think Forsberg gets one in tonight.
The listeners deviated from that last time, and Forsberg had about 100 shot attempts in the last game. I like the call, Jack. I think Forsberg could have a chance. Thanks for calling in.
Yes, thank you guys.
Absolutely. So good Jack play. Going with Philip Forsberg.
It's not a cop-out, Jack.
It's been a very popular pick as of late.
No need to apologize.
There's no need to apologize for picking Philip Forsberg. Didn't score last game, though.
Should have.
Means he'll probably score.
Should have. Yeah.
Been playing pretty well. So, Philip Forsberg has been selected. Jack has gone with him. Joe Rexrode, let's start with you today. Your Preds pick to click for the game tonight against the Florida Panthers would be who?
Well, Jack got me thinking about that power play. Give me Tolvanen.
Really? Going with Tolvanen tonight. Had a great look the other night. Had couple of great looks the other night.
He did.
Him and Forsberg both. Not able to. I can't believe you didn't pick Yarncroak.
I'm back on the Tolvanen hype train. I've been known to be on that train before, and I'm back on it. Yeah, I mean, well, Yarncroak. It's too obvious. Okay,
it is.
Yeah,
second and goal.
You have none, so I want to leave Yarncroak for you.
Well, thank you very much. Tolvanen has been selected by Rexrode. Jack, today's listener, going with Philip Forsberg, Elijah Campbell, / Ryan Porth. Who are you going with in this competition? The goal scorer for tonight's game for the Predators against the Florida Panthers, who do you take it?
Ryan Wise, in his decision to send me his preference list beforehand, and made sure that it was relatively deep in case we had to dig into this into the bag here. But we'll go with Mikael Granlund to score a goal tonight.
So we talked to Dan Lambert, Predators assistant coach, earlier in the show about Mikael Granlund, the versatility that he's displayed. Played the last few games at center instead of wing. Porth going with Granlund in this selection. So Tolvanen, Granlund, Forsberg have been selected. I will go with the captain. Give me Roman Josi scoring a goal. Make it on the power play. I think it's been a minute since Josi scored a goal. I think he's due. And I saw at times last game and last couple of games, they get to a point in this where he just decides to take over and skates through the neutral zone and carries the puck in. I think he scores on one of those tonight. Give me Roman Josi with a goal tonight against Florida. So that is today's edition of Preds Pick to Click, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. I am going with Roman Josi, Joe Rexrode with Ellie Tolvanen, Ryan Porth / Elijah Campbell with Mikael Granlund, and Jack, today's listener, selecting the ever-popular Philip Forsberg in this competition.
Ryan Porth weighing in. Should I read Ryan Porth's idea, by the way? Ryan Porth weighed in on the last...
Well, that has nothing to do with the Predators.
Well, I know, but... But it's something that we didn't get into, which actually I think is interesting. We can wait, though.
Yeah, we'll wait.
All right.
We'll wait on that. Speaking of the Predators, we had Adam Vingan on yesterday from The Athletic, who came out with a piece yesterday basically saying that the Predators, as you look at their schedule, as you look at their roster and their body of work so far, that it's done. It's over with. We had some comments from Vingan yesterday on the show as well, saying he does not see a path out of this for the Predators and that the rebuild needs to begin. Joe, as you look at this team, as you look at the Predators right now, have we reached the point where it's going to take a rebuild to get this Predators team back on the right track?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it starts right this second, but the rebuild has a wide definition. So I could buy a retooling and still keeping most of the core together and just making good choices, which has not been happening enough in the last few years. But, yeah, this team is clearly trending in the wrong direction. I think it would take, I don't want to say a miracle, but this team to be in the playoffs would be a shocking development to me at this point. And some of that is, some of the things that are out of their control that have happened, but it's still not a good enough team. It's not a good enough team. It's going the wrong direction. You got to change things up, and you got to replenish your system too. You've got to have more young prospects coming up to build a future.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, you look at the standings right now. They're 8 points out of a spot for the playoffs. Their goal differential is minus 17. Like, there are a lot of stats that are, I think, useless in the NHL. The goal differential, usually a pretty good stat. Like, right now, Tampa Bay is a plus 32. Doing pretty well. They're in first place in the division. Carolina, a plus 16. You're minus 17 with the Predators.
It's a simple stat, but, yeah, it kind of tells the story, doesn't it?
It illustrates a lot when you really think about it. So, like, they're just – and Duchesne talked about this on the show yesterday. They're having a really tough time offensively. Like, they – and that's been a consistent theme with this group all season long, to the point now where, like, I think you look at this group offensively – I just don't really see a way out of it. Like, to me, we've seen enough at this point. Like, if you're expecting Duchesne and Arvidsson and Johansson and some of these guys to just magically break out of it all of a sudden, like, this has been the same story with them for a year and a half at this point. So I said it, a week and a half, a couple weeks ago, like, the Predators need to begin the process of selling off some of their assets. Like, they've got to be open to this now. And I think with the injury situation that they're in and with each passing game that goes by, we're getting closer to that. Like you said, like, it doesn't have to be today or tomorrow when you start to do this. But we've talked about the timeline, how maybe that gets moved up this year with the trade deadline and the quarantine that could come with that. I think we're not that far away from the Predators having to do that. And I think, based on what they've seen this far, and I know David Poile joined Darren Donick and Chase earlier this week and talked about, this next stretch here with Carolina and Florida and then Dallas coming up as well, you'll have a pretty good idea of where you are and whether or not you've got a shot to be a playoff team. We'll see what the Predators are able to do tonight, but obviously not off to a good start with a loss against Carolina and just with the injuries that they sustained and the team as a whole. Like, I just don't think this team right now is good enough. And the rebuild or retooling or whatever way you want to phrase it is probably going to be inevitable at some point this year.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about seeing where they are. I mean, what you need to see is evidence that this first several weeks of the season was wrong, right? I mean, I think you already know where you are. I guess it's just a matter of, can this team rise up and do something extremely unexpected and get back in? We said going in to Tuesday's game, or I said 14 to 22 points, in this ridiculous stretch, which goes all the way till the 21st against Dallas before you get a little bit of a break from the top teams in the division. So now make it 14 of 20.
So yeah, it's a heck of a bar.
Is that happening? Again, if it does, then revisit the idea that, this team could have any kind of chance.
Well, you just – with the way this team is offensively, you just don't give yourself much of a shot. And it's going to take more than playing well in the third period. Like, we talked about it with Duchesne yesterday. We brought it up with Dan Lambert this morning as well. I mean, it's become a fact at this point that this team does not start games well. And, look, if they had, like, some magical answer as to why that is, they would have fixed it by now. But the evidence is what it is. This team does not start games well. And you just can't continue to play from behind and be chasing the game as often as they are and give yourself a chance to win with any sort of consistency. Like, it's not going to happen that way.
And I just don't buy the third period thing is fine. I mean, again, it doesn't make up for the starts anyway, but I do think in a lot of those cases, you're talking about multi-game deficits, and you know how that goes.
Yeah, you're sitting back.
Yeah, it's how the other team plays has a lot to do with the Preds having success in the third period. It's because they're almost never ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a big part of it for sure. So
The Predators back on the ice tonight against the Florida Panthers. Puck drop at 7 o'clock, pregame at 6 o'clock here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And speaking of the Predators, 102.5 The Game and T-Mobile have teamed up to help you continue the tradition with a hockey home-gating party, and it's time to text into the game text line at 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025 for your chance to win the T-Mobile Hockey Home Gate. You can watch a weekend Preds game with a Dos Equis prize pack, which includes a case of beer, dessert from Nothing But Cakes, a T-Mobile prize pack, and food provided by 312 Pizza Company in Germantown. Just text the word Broadway to 615-737-1025. That's Broadway to 615-737-1025. Now to enter. The winner will be contacted later today on Thursday. Must be 21 or older to enter the competition. So hit up our text line at 615-737-1025. We'll be right back, switch gears, and talk about a little Tennessee Titans football with Teresa Walker from the Associated Press. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game.